Welcome to the second phase of the internationally acclaimed Positive Personal Power Podcast. This webcast is devoted to pillars of success and philosophies of life and the hardcore tools you must have to achieve success in business and life. Distinguished and successful, internationally known business and thought leaders, Nathaniel Schooler and Stephen J. Manning, give you their hardcore tools to succeed in business and life. Schooler and Manning are as hardcore about success as boot camps in the military and training camps in professional sports. Now, here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
Wow. Well, we have another episode of Positive Personal Power, and we are really lucky to be joined by Stephen J. Manning again for this episode. And phase one of our podcast shows, we've actually interviewed over 300 different podcasts, actually. And on this show, we release an episode every 2 weeks at the moment. And we appreciate so much all the positive feedback that has been coming our way. And, you know, if you don't know Stephen J. Manning, you can go back and listen to some of the other episodes. But in brief, he built a billion-dollar marketing business from a practically bankrupt company. And he's basically an expert in business, management, marketing, leadership. And today we're going to talk about leadership homogenized, and this is not your father's leadership versus management kind of stuff. So welcome, Stephen. I'm hoping you can explain what you mean by this is not your father's leadership versus management.
Yeah. Good evening, Nat. And thank you. Thank you again. You're a prince and a rock star, and appreciate the introduction. Naturally, leadership is a topic that you and I talk about an awful lot. It means so much to so many people. And then upon reflection, I thought about it and, oh, heck, I said, well, kind of like homogenized, you know, like milk, you know, stuff that rises to the top for real rather than it's leadership. What a grand concept. To describe where I'm coming from is, you know, there are about likely 20,000 books in print. Talk about leadership, defining what it is. And so much of it ultimately ends up being a discourse on leadership versus management, you know, contrasting the two, and then somehow working back into what a leader is, what a leader is not, and what a leader does and what a leader does not. And then, of course, all of this could be conflated with success, leadership to success. And there's a whole lot of that. Now, I have grown very exhausted a long time ago of the whole discourse about leaders versus managers. Then you have visionaries versus strictly managers, you know, management machines that execute the visions of the leaders. Then leadership by what? How do you lead? By example, by fear works. Autocracy, turn on the news. Benevolence, the benevolent leader. Go back to Plato and history. You know, those are kind of populist wannabes. Those people want to make everybody associated with themselves feel good. Whether they're failing or succeeding anything else, laissez-faire. Oh, leader, I'm one of those. You guys, the ladies, do what you're going to do. It's going to work out. Oh, great. Then there's leadership by charisma. Look at the strength of personality. I lead because I'm so charismatic. Try buying bread at the store with charisma. Then they're leaders strictly by checkbook. You know, I write the checks. This is what we do, which is often true, but it's a tiny little piece of the story. And then all these books are talking and all these talking heads. I guess I'm a talking head today myself. A truckload of what you must do, what you must not do. And all of that to me ends up being, I don't know. It's kind of like I look at like a pot of pea soup that's boiling. You know it's boiling because it's got these little bubbles. Boom, boop, 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 boop. Otherwise, it's just green stuff. So I look at leadership and I boil it down to something somewhat different. Because in the world we live in today, the old paradigm, leaders, managers, that's absurd. that is now a prescription for failure. So I say you homogenize, you put all that stuff together. And, you know, a minor digression, if you will, as to all of this. We have options in life and business to do one of three things. We can lead, we can follow, or just get out. Going backwards, get out. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because you know what? You can't just give up. It's kind of mindless to concede defeat, doesn't it? Before you start anything. So much easier to fail than it is to succeed. Let's forget that, to follow. Okay, why don't you just get in the flow and become what? Ordinary? And fade into obscurity? And now you have a third option, to lead. However that comes about, and it comes about different interesting ways. Well, I think that you can lead, and that's a very elegant proposition. You can lead in business, you can lead in life, and you can be a thought leader. Now, you and I spend so much time on all that. How elegant is it? How relevant is it to be able to influence what people think? And more importantly, how they think. Now, that would be the holy grail of leadership, if you will. So, you know, I will hopscotch a bit in my thinking here because so much of leadership is pounding on something somehow to make a cohesive decision, make a cohesive environment. Today, speaking of being homogenized, see, we live in a world of data onslaught, mind-bending speed, mind-bending volume. And so much of that ultimately leads to abandonment of fundamentals of prudent leadership. We talked about Tony Robbins, among others, this morning. See, I wonder about vision for a leader who must have vision, who is not set within managed goals. Oh, I want to feel better. What exactly does that mean? How about people who tell you that you can dream your way to success? Or you can delegate your way to success. Not going to happen. Without a doubt, no matter how we homogenize all this, a leader must exhibit vision. If you don't have a vision, you can't establish goals. But by contrast to your father's management versus leadership discussion, today, a successful leader has to have superior and classic management skills. That is true of business, that's true of your personal life. And then, back to the obvious, I think, you have to be ambitious, great, but then you also have to set attainable goals. That's part of leadership. Now, if you are clear on where you're going, what the goals are, how are you going to get there? And then I think that bottom line to this, a leader has to chart a path to those goals. A leader has to create the decision-making and data analytics matrices, has to retain control, but has to delegate judiciously. Chew on business, chew on your personal life. I think that gets you to what I think about homogenization of leadership.
Wow. So for people that are sort of listening to this and they are within a business, they may not be a leader, but they have to lead themselves, right? They may have a team that they lead. Are you saying that they're not really managing that team and they should be leading it? Or can you kind of elaborate on this homogenized kind of message that you've put out there? Because I'm a little confused, if I'm honest about that.
The classic leader who has the vision, the grand scheme, the vision, who then presents it and goes away, because his job, his self-image ends at the management line. That no longer exists. I don't think there's a really significant leader who can walk away from management functions. As simple as that. If you're not going to chart what management is going to do, you lose control of the environment. You're no longer lead effectively. You're just another passenger on the train. So the fundamental point I'm making is that I have a vision. I'm the visionary, and then let it go. Let it go to the people who are the quintessential managers. Guess what happens? The board of directors fires you sooner or later, or you find out that your family is not on board anymore because you need to execute. And you need to have all those management skills that your management people have. So when you delegate, which you must, otherwise there's only 24 hours a day, you have the tools to understand what they're doing. You have created the path. You have the matrices to control the action, if you will, and you have the tools to know the progress that's being made. So when a company, when your gig, your personal business gig is going in some direction, is it the right direction, wrong direction, how much progress you're making? What should you do next? How do you adjust? So if you are a leader in the all pure sense of the word, but not a manager, I think it's a prescription for failure.
Right, because you're not getting involved with what's actually going on in the day-to-day, right?
That is
so you're
correct.
Kind of basically lost in the vision and your creativity and kind of everything else, yeah? That's what you're saying.
Sir. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's very good. So can you talk more about never considering failure an option? Because I think that's really important for people to think about.
I think, okay. One of the pillars of success that I talk right about, you and I talk about in a prior podcast, which, by the way, thank you very much for that, because the feedback has been very gratifying. I'm kind of humbled by the people who reached out to say they, you know, it's great, an hour of two, quote, smart guys talking, but in there at I don't know, 21.2, and I'm like, you guys said something that was really, really kind of transformational. I'm not so sure that much of what I think is transformational. In fact, I'd rather doubt much of it is, but never consider failure an option. It's one of our pillars of success. Imagine getting into whatever the heck it is. And you say, well, this might fail, likely will fail. Most things fail. Very few things succeed. What exactly is the point? So I say, never consider failure an option. Why get in the pool knowing you're going to drown? Except, and I will humbly tell you that I've had a few people in my business life who expressed the reason for wanting to work with me alongside, for me, etc., was not my particular genius in anything, because I have none, is that I just don't consider failure an option. Isn't it cool? We're going to get into the thing. We're going to make it work. Now, one of the things that successful leaders have in common is the understanding, it's a couple of them, and they dovetail, understanding that you should not consider failure an option. Why? Start out behind the proverbial eight ball. How much effort you're going to get into something that you believe might actually fail or strongly believe would fail? Why? Because most new things kind of fail. But a good leader looks at a component of never consider failure an option, which means homework. You do the homework, you do more. How much homework? Not enough. And then when you've done that, you do some more. And then you research, you become a shameless researcher. And then when you think you're done doing the homework, then do some more. And so that is a very significant component in the thing you're going to get into where you're not going to consider it to fail. And another aspect of that is a good leader, if you will know, already knows that most significantly successful people have failed in business and often in life, and have failed often and sometimes failed mightily. However, the one thing successful leaders have in common is that their failure was never on account of insufficient work, insufficient homework, preparation, insufficient work. They've done the work, and they put in the elbow grease, the proverbially. And when the thing does not work, it most likely, well, it certainly is not for lack of effort or the thought that went into it. It's most likely there's something fundamentally wrong with it. Something, we missed the massive elephant in the little room somehow. And okay, now there's a lesson to be learned there, but we don't wake up in the morning and whine and carry on. I am really, really big on doing post settlement agreement negotiations, because that is when we take the emotion out of the thing. That's when we decide what we really want. I'm not big on doing a post-mortem. Why the hell did the darn thing die so badly? Sometimes it fails so badly that it defies imagination. Bottom line is something a very smart man once said to me, you know, Steve, sometimes things that don't make sense just don't make sense. Okay, so I said to him, Sam, I'm not really big on riddles. Yeah, I'm kind of black and white now. It's not a riddle. Think about it. I said, I'm not going to think about it. It's insane. Nuts. It's circular. It's dumb. And then I thought about it for, a couple of years. And it dawned on me what he really meant was that sometimes things that don't make sense means there's something we just did not know. You want to do this again? Figure out what you did not know. Let's not talk about it. Figure out what you didn't know. Sometimes things that don't make sense don't make sense.
Yeah, I've heard that before, like from somewhere, like what you don't know, you don't know. It's the same sort of thing, isn't it? But getting like a product market fit, like is that really what we're sort of talking about here, like new product development? Or are we talking about every innovation here? And I suppose we're talking about everything in business in terms of innovation, aren't we? Not just new products here, right?
I think that you're talking about everything in innovation. Also, I think that you're also talking about personal life. You know, so many things in your personal life, in my opinion, are the really most sensitive, the most finest, most elegant business relationships. What is a marriage if it's not the most intricate business relationship there is? You know, and you need to lead in that as well. You need to find your way to lead, to be a leader in your relationship. I don't mean a leader rather than a follower. I mean a co-leader, mm-hmm. where everybody in the relationship, whether that's a marriage, whether it's a partnership, whatever the heck it is, co-leaders, that to me that means we leverage our core competencies. Me, mine, you, yours, and us together, what we do well together. Okay? We're doing this episode today. I'm delighted. Can't wait for the next one we're going to do. That's going to air 2 weeks after this one. Why? Because I think we just get better at this every time we do it.
Absolutely.
I learn from you every time we do this, and I'm more focused on what you want out of it. Nat, I'm not trying to be nice to you, but you do have competencies I don't have. And it's incumbent on me as a leader in the relationship to recognize that I need to figure out how to benefit from your competency. I don't mean that in a negative sense. No, because no. If I'm going to try to do what you do, 5 years from now, I will be a talented beginner. No. That's why the collaboration works. The stuff you do, I don't do well. And if I want to study it, emptying hours a day for a long, long time, I'll never catch up.
Thank you.
Rather than that, leadership within a relationship is just that.
I'm sorry to interject there, but so this is really following on from the last conversation that we had around like, assessing your skills, assessing what you're really good at, so you know what you know and you know what you don't know, And then you know which areas that you could perhaps work on if you really wanted to, based upon, I'm not going to talk about personality types because I don't really know a huge amount about those, if I'm brutally honest. But I think based upon your existing skill set, I mean, there are going to be things that are perhaps a little bit outside that skill set, or are there going to be things, there are going to be things within it that are going to, you're going to need to get better at, right? And we all need to get better. I mean, that's why we get on, because both of us want to improve. Everything that we do, we want to improve. And when I finish an episode and I might, you know, and I'll launch it, I look at it and I'm like, oh, I didn't like that at all. Or yeah, I'm not sure about that. And I look at the things that I don't like about it. But then, you know, when people turn around and say, well, that was really good, I learned a lot from you guys, then that kind of makes me feel okay about the sort of imperfections that I notice. And I know you're a little bit similar in that respect, you know.
Well, look, I do listen to these as well and watch them, and I share them with people, lots of people around me. Thankfully, they invest the time to listen and watch. And I look at it and sometimes I cringe, not because something I said was bad, but I know I could have done that a lot better. And now to just digress for one little moment is I've been asked this once or twice in the millions of miles I've run in my lifetime. Isn't it exhaustive to be you sometimes? The answer is, well, there's a fine line between love and hate, and there's a fine line between exhaustion and exhilaration, you know? The reality is that it's exhilarating and it's also exhausting to be the unhappiest guy in the room when a project goes off perfectly well. And why? Because I just know that I could have done better. And I'm not upset with a 97% solution. I'm upset with the 3% that I might imagine what I could have done. Now, to the competencies that you and I talk about, for example, as you know, I do a fair bit of writing. I might be better than some, not as good as many, but I do a fair bit of writing. And thankfully, there's an audience for my stuff, as there's a big audience for your stuff. The stuff you post every day, I get this thing goes off at 2 a.m, my time when you post it, I roll my feet over and read it because I enjoy it and I get something out of it. I am astoundingly pleased and somewhat surprised to be married to a truly remarkable woman. Now, she for years would send me stuff, honey, I got to write this. Can you write a couple sentences, you know? Because after all, I am the family scribe. That said, I have two incredibly successful daughters who do a lot of writing for big companies, and well, it's just part of the job, you know? Having said that, oh yeah, honey, okay, I'll do that. And it's a release, it's a something. Yet everything I write, I send to my wife.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
And why do I do that? Now, I ask the same questions every time. Honey, is this in English? Which means people can understand me because, you know, I'm not a native speaker to begin with. My use of the language is what it is. Two, am I being thoughtful, angry, or arrogant? And three, please redline this. Now, her complementary competency. So she leads me by my nose to fixing things for consumption by other people, not up at 3 a.m. ranting about something like I am. Now, here's a collaboration of many, 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 many years, which works very well for me. Man, there were those times when she'll send me back the red line. Oh, she's careful, by the way, because I bristle a tad. And she'll send back a line, would you consider rewriting this short paragraph? And I go, what do you mean? He said, well, I read it. I thought you meant this. And then I read it a second time to get it. Okay, I got it. You got to read it twice. You know me intimately. You got to read it twice. It's word salad. It's garbage. You lead me by my everything in a social media world, for example.
Thank you. I've tell you what, though. I would like to ask you something that I'm interested in, and I think the listeners will be interested in here. Because, you know, I'm big into leadership. I'm big into learning more and more about leadership. As you know, I've been working with Kim Adele the past 2 years and learning as much as I can, really, about leadership in business, in big business. And you said here that when we were speaking, you said, living in our world of data onslaught at mind-bending speed and mind-blowing volume leads to abandonment of fundamentals of prudent leadership. Can you just sort it? Is that because there's so much data that people have to make massively fast decisions and then they abandon their core focus, or what do you mean by that?
What you just said is accurate. And we talked about this at some length when we talked about competencies. Stick to your core competencies. What do you do every single day if you sit in your living room working on a small business, or you're working on a job, you're looking for advancement, you run it, sit in a boardroom, run a big company, sit in an executive position? You are absolutely assaulted by all this stuff. Stuff is a great word, because the stuff coming at you is stuff. Some of it is brilliantly relating to what you do. Most of it is absolutely irrelevant, except it's being fed to you in bullets. It's fed to you in sound bites, intended successfully to grab a little bit of the gray matter. And if you run a business, you run your personal life, you run, we'll do whatever the heck you do. If you don't process this couple, three times a day, saying, oops, I must be doing something wrong. I should really be doing that. Always should be doing that, because it is really smart women and men that write those sound bites. You know, it's a friend of mine who reads the Los Angeles Times religiously. It's his Bible. And he reads the headlines. I said, do you understand that the person writing the headline is not the person writing the article? The headline writer writes those seven words, makes twice as much money, three times as much money as the person writing. Okay, I know. How do I know? Because I made a wonderful living writing headlines and advertising. My clients say, gee, we need the headline for this. Now you write 30, not one. Let's pick two or three, because you know, sometimes I wrote stuff, I will know my telling you, for major online newsletters that we published, without ever seeing the advertising. It's a good day when Oprah Winfrey company pays you $200,000 to run a newsletter thing for them on a Wednesday afternoon. And hey, I run out of time. I need to do it or not do it. I choose to take the money for the company. And I wrote the thing. Had nothing to do with what they wanted to advertise.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though, isn't it, with all this sort of clickbait that kind of happens out there.
Absolutely.
So we've got bills to pay, right? But
the bottom line is, if you don't focus on your leadership skills, your competencies, here's what we do, and we're going to do this really well, you're going to get absolutely slammed against walls.
Right.
And it is so amazing how I've been in rooms with people who run successful businesses who sit there and literally whine that they really are beginning to fail. They're falling behind. Everybody's right. Doing that. Excuse me. Amazon started opening brick and mortar stores. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, really. I mean, they closed them 25 years ago, but they started opening them again. By the way, they're failing, but that's really not.
But they have an R&D budget, which is obscene. That's why Amazon is doing so well, because they spend much more than most companies on R&D. I think they probably spend the largest amount on R&D, actually. Look, from what I hear.
I had a client, a car client, car maker client. Their ordinary ad budget, ordinary, that's not weird media, that's not event media, none of the esoteric stuff, it's about $1 million to a month. Now, $1 million to is a bunch of money, okay? I don't know what they were spending, totally $3, $4, $5 million, whatever the heck it was. And there's these people, one day have this brilliant idea that rather than just making those cars being really successful worldwide, they're also going to do this. Really? Well, everybody has their own battery plant. Musk says no. Everybody has the plant that makes this and that, the other. And then they get a guy like me with my humble background to say, I'm confused. If you were to go and manufacture your own drive shafts, how much money do you think you're going to save? Stop. I'm not talking about a couple billion you're going to invest. I'm not talking about any of that. But once it's running.
After the step factor of the purchase, right? The capital investment.
Right. Then I said, so what do you think your supplier makes? Let's look at the 10Ks. Oh, gee, they had a really good year. They made 2.5% after tax. Okay, so what do we get in the business where the best supplier in the world makes 2.5% after tax? So when something goes wrong at 3 a.m, we can't sleep. Now if something goes wrong at 3 a.m, we call that CEO and yell at him. And his life depends on that phone call. How about we stay in our lane? As we discussed just a couple of days ago, my little life, my humble little life in business, I mean, I was a kid in a big candy store. And yeah, I'd go to my boss and say, hey, I'm going to do this. He'd say, no, you're not. Why? It's going to distract you from your core business.
Yeah.
And, of course, the whole diversification, mad dash by all the majors over the last 20 years has all ultimately filtered out. We got to get rid of that because we make cars. We really don't know how to run laundries in Southern Florida. But I don't know. I think this answers your question in something of a roundabout way. So,
yeah, it's kind of losing focus. I mean, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about people losing focus in. But this happens not just in business. It's all in business because people are in business. But it happens in your job as well. You can be completely distracted by something that's going to add little or no value to your career at all. And that's the same with a business, right? Because and that's what is really, marketers are the worst, because they will, you know, present company accept it, but they will look at the next big thing, right? And they'll look at it and they get really super excited about these things that are actually not going to give them any tangible value whatsoever for the business that they're working in. But yet they're going to go and put their jobs on the line, because that's the biggest mistake people make, isn't it? Is they will sign up to something new, just because it's new. And then they're like, oh, well, it didn't work. It's like, well, there's nothing wrong with trying it. I'm not against trying things, but you got to, like you said, you know, that failure is not an option, because it's either going to get shelved or it's going to do well and you're going to learn from it either way, right? But you still need to say to your boss, well, hold on a minute. I've spent all this money on X, Y, and Z. And okay, it didn't work now, but I think in a couple of years' time, maybe it might work, right? So I think being very careful what you're going to do is also very, very important. But it all comes back to the vision, doesn't it? The vision and then the goals. And I was talking about this yesterday on a podcast I did with Nelly on one of the other shows that we run. And I was talking about SMART goals and how SMART goal setting, you know, when you mention the word SMART to me, I just sort of look at you and my brain glazes over. I can't actually function in that space, because I'm more of a creative thinker than I am a really specific, measurable, achievable, whatever, right? So I function better on the OKRS, which is like the way that Google set goals, which is a way of kind of motivating people and stuff. But you know, but then it all ends up focusing on that vision. And if you miss that vision, and you forget what you're doing it for. I mean, that's the biggest thing, is you've got to know what you're doing it for, haven't you, really? The purpose behind the actual vision is in, you know, my opinion, the most important thing, right? Would you agree with that? Or
I absolutely 100% agree. It's we call it, you know, the shiny penny. Everybody is mesmerized or seduced by the shiny penny. That's a new thing. So you have the core, you have your own core competencies, things you do as a leader of in your job, if you will, and you are really mesmerized by that. And you rush to that. And at some point, your spouse, your partner, your boss comes on saying, "Hey, Steve, what happened to, why is that slipping? How much time are you spending doing that?" And then so many times, back to doing homework, back to being prepared to not to succeed rather than fail. The grass is always greener on the other side until you get there and you discover it's astroturf. It's a shiny penny. How about a prescription for failure? I grew up in a company where my boss just, my job was most precarious when I walk my boss's office and say, "I'm going to do this also because it'll make us a ton of money." And when I got done saying, "It really doesn't take a lot of resources, it'll take a few hours of my time every week." And then he sent me off skiing for the weekend to come up with something better that's really applicable to our business, because being, it's a shiny penny.
Yeah.
It may very well work out, may work out well. Just think about applying yourself to the core business, the core life, your core relationships, and maximizing those, pushing those forward. You know, we talk about leadership in relationship, leaderships in a marriage. How many people are out there in a relationship, a marriage, or whatever the construct is, who spend a whole lot of time in the course of a day thinking about that as a really, really, really the most elegant of businesses there are? Mind you, ignore it, it goes away. But the way it goes away is weird, in that it's different than just, you know, a business will start plateauing and go down, 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 and eventually withers and dies. Personal relationships are not like that. Everything seems to be okay. And imagine you're on the beach and you have your hand in the sand, you know, just a little bit below the surface, and you lift your hand, however slowly, and all of a sudden you see your skin above the sand, and then lift it up just another quarter of an inch, all the sand goes flying between your fingers and your hands exposed. It's an amazing thing when a relationship goes bad and all it goes like this and bang, it hits a wall. It doesn't. And then when it's over, you say, "Well, I should have seen it. I've seen it. I should have dealt with it, blah, blah, blah." How about you mind that business? How about you think about it? And you know, you love with your heart and you marry with your brain. You have a relationship with your heart. You stay in it with your brain. You romance your partner every day because you don't, somebody else will. You know, yeah. And it's a weirdest thing where, you know, you see the imagery, the sand, poof, all of a sudden there's no more sand. It's like a poof. And then you have people vaccinated philosophically. "Well, I don't know what really happened." Really?
Yeah, well, the thing is, that's applicable to, you know, I mean, I'm speaking to Kim a lot about these sorts of things the past couple of years. And what I found sounds very interesting, which I think is very true, is people just want three things. They basically want to be listened to, they want to be respected, and they want to be understood. And most conflict, from what I can understand, is basically because you haven't fulfilled, you know, those three things: listening to them, respecting them, and understanding their drivers, right? And that's so applicable to all of this whole conversation, right? In terms of business and the way that it's kind of heading. But, you know, we're big on success, right? You and I, we're big on personal success and business success, right? But there are so many of these books, so many of these people that think that they can just meditate and they can visualize something happening for them, right? And you know, I was really annoyed about this in the past, because actually I you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, maybe I was one of those people like listening to these guys who were, but you know, way before I started interviewing people and podcasting, I was listening to these people who were saying, yeah, you know, all you need to do is sit there and you can visualize and everything that you want in life is just gonna manifest, right? And it's like the biggest lot of rubbish, because without the research, right, without the connections, because connections really help, like they massively help in business and in life. And without doing something, you're not gonna get anything. You're just gonna sit there and you're gonna buy another ticket to someone's workshop on your credit card, and you're gonna end up being more broke than you were before. And then you're going to continue this cycle of, well, don't worry, it's okay, it's okay, Stephen, it'll be fine. You don't need to worry. You just come to my workshop next month, and everything's going to be fixed. And then for 3 days, you're pumped up, right? You get home, you tell your wife, don't worry, it's going to be amazing. Life's going to change, and I'm going to be rich this time next year. I'm going to take you to the Caribbean, right? And then what happens? You nothing. You basically end up in this sour cycle of no activity, constant visualization and like, you know, it's like pointless cycle of rubbish that occurs. And I'm mad about it. You know, I'm not mad anymore like I used to be about it, but I'm mad, right? I'm as mad as I get these days, unless someone's trying to choke me, but that's a different kettle of fish on the mats, right? Or on my motorcycle if I nearly crash into a postal van, but that's something I want to avoid altogether.
Nat, I don't have anything sage to add what you said. Again, it's the most amazing thing to me, as I relate to somebody who was on network TV show here in the States yesterday, the whole imagery thing. And I keep saying to myself, okay, Mary Ellen and Bob, you go out to the backyard and you hold your fists up like this, close your eyes really tight, and imagine yourself being richer, healthier, taller, better looking, lots of friends, really problem-free, or certainly any way to it. Now, while you're doing that, I think you should also image the lawn mowing itself, okay? But the same paradigm. Now, I really hope and invite everybody listening and watching to check out our show on Pillars of Success. Now, if you follow those, they are elegant in their simplicity. But if you follow those, you will attain more success. Very simple. Okay, if you don't, we'll give you your money back, which is easy since we didn't charge you any money for it. But the reality is that all the imagery, it's great to see yourself somehow. But that without the work, the homework, and then the work, the Manning is some Swiss cheese without the cheese. Do the work. And you know, the thing that makes me really upset is, absolutely dovetailing to what you said, is people who say, I've tried everything to accomplish this and I failed. Okay. I was listening to somebody again on a network show who's talking about obesity, which is an international problem, certainly an American problem.
Oh, it's huge everywhere.
I tried everything. I tried all the books and the tapes and the exercise routines, and I'm still morbidly obese. Okay. Well, you know what? Might as well. Well, you just bought into failure as an option.
I thought you were going to say might as well go eat there for a
right.
minute.
So, okay, so then my question was, because I'm limited, you know, my question was, and I'm going to say this because you always get a laugh out of it. My best line I've ever written in advertising was lose weight while sleeping. No pills, no diet, no exercise. Unfortunately, when I sent it to lawyers, they told me I would look really bad in prison orange. So to this seemingly smart person on TV, I was kind of yelling at the TV set, input and output. Now, how much you eat, how much you put out equals weight gain or weight loss. And I said, just one more thing. Go see Dr. Schooler. He's a really good endo guy. And have your thyroid checked out. If your thyroid is firing just fine, input, output, you lose or gain weight. It's not going to happen. What the pill's going to do? The pill's going to put you on hyperdrive or something. I don't know what they're going to do for you. But how? And the day you skip that one pill, you put on 3 pounds and you are absolutely devastated. You know what? You got to do the work. You got to
absolutely.
Yeah. Imagery is wonderful, but I don't call it imagery. I call it projection. If I do the work, I can project myself looking like you.
But you know, it's really interesting because I actually interviewed this chap called Dr. Blake Schusterman, and he's the kidney doc, right? This is his brand. He's the kidney doc in the US, and he's on this Positive Personal Power podcast. So if you're listening to this and you have a problem eating junk food, right, which the most hilarious conversation, I actually had eaten a Big Mac the same morning, right? I literally went and I this is the last Big Mac that I've eaten, and this was in 2020. I'm serious. In 2020, I'm in Poland, right? Staying with my ex-girlfriend in Poland, and I've eaten the last Big Mac I've ever eaten in my life. And you know what? It's amazing how your brain connects with these the tastes and the experience of the Big Mac, right? And all of these things, because it's just junk. And you need to just understand, you're going to feel way better if you eat better food. And you know what? I can't believe he managed to talk me out of that. It was the most hilarious thing. Like, you're interviewing a kidney doctor, right? And I'm like, hey, doc, I just ate a Big Mac. And he had every answer to stop me from eating junk. By the end of the episode, I was just, boom. It totally, and it's given me control over my food now. It's like the most insane thing. Like, that's why I love having a podcast show, because I get to talk to smart people like you, Stephen. But the thing is, though, is that what we're talking about here is we're really talking about self-leadership. That's basically what we're that you know, self-leadership and self-management, and those two things kind of going together. Am I right in saying that?
You are. Okay. Interesting that the example you just gave about you and the dude and the Big Mac. There's one component in there, which again ties into a lot of stuff we said. As it is with success, one of the things we talk about, you have to be ready to be successful. But then you have to set yourself on a path to that, without a doubt. There is no way on this good God's earth that man could have talked you out of Big Macs if you weren't ready to be talked out of Big Macs. It is your path to success, your path to self-leadership. Except that that moment in time, that man was firing on 12 cylinders, right into those neurons that said, I got to give up Big Macs, they're not good for me. You were there. It is not him. You may want to give him credit. He happens to be the guy there when it happened for you. This is something you wanted to do. No, something you knew you needed to do and you would do. Make a plan, have a goal, go implement. And that's what you did. Big Macs are not any different than buying the big laundry chain in Alabama, or building another skyscraper in Midtown Manhattan. Kind of the same process, intellectually speaking, okay? And when your intellect can overcome your emotions, oh, you are one powerful dude.
That's it. That's it. You hit the nail on the head there. It's it's becoming in control, being in control of your emotions so that you can, and you have to be in control of your brain in order to be in control of your emotions, because otherwise your emotions lead you to do whatever that you feel like doing, or people can just push a button. I mean, this is the worst thing, is when people push a button in your head and then they control you. Like that control is given away to someone else. When if you just stayed calm and you were like, okay, I hear what that guy said, but like, I'm actually calmer than that. I don't need to be triggered by that. Like, I could choose to be triggered, or I can choose to not be triggered, right? And this is something that I've been working on this. I'm 47 this year. I've been working on this for, you know, 47 years, right? and I'm getting better at it. I'm getting better at it. After spending time with people like you, I'm getting way better at it. I think it's also something, it's like, you know, dealing with resilience. Like when the more resilient you become, the more, you know, God or whomever sends you more lessons and more things to, I'm not going to say fight against, but I'm going to say more things to deal with, because you're actually ready for more. I mean, this is the thing, you know, and to lead yourself, working on resilience is something that has really helped me a lot. It's something I wrote a book on resilience with Nelly last year. And we did like 10 episodes on resilience. So if anyone wants to dig into those, I'll drop a link somewhere. So or you can reach out to me or Stephen, we can send you some info on those.
I have one comment to make on what you said. Just one comment. Heck, it will only take a couple of hours, but just one comment. For those of you watching this and certainly listening to it, you can't make up the fact that my collaborative partner and resident genius, Nat Schooler, is a really righteous athlete. It's when he talks about being choked out, well, if you're into Brazilian jiu-jitsu for several hours a day, you kind of get that. But then the morning two-hour workouts and all of that, and when we live and work on two time zones apart from each other, but then we communicate plus or minus 20 hours during the day. I know what he cooked for dinner. What he cooked for dinner is just bloody balanced. So there's self-control there. Nobody goes to the mat, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, without having some genuine self-control. Otherwise, we're all saying goodbye to you forever. So I just thought I'd throw that into the mix of things. Because, among other things, because I want to say this about my friend Nat. Also, in context of leadership, we talk about control, about defining your own leadership, your own path, and so on. The structure that you add to your own life, not enforced by others, that creates that degree of self-control, and ultimately self-control manifests in self-reliance. I can control my environment. I control what I'm doing, what I'm thinking. I'm going to rely on my brain power. This engine does this well, and that's what this engine is going to do. And then you execute, because going back to the core idea here, today, any leader that doesn't have the associated, absolutely necessary management skills, cannot master management tools, reporting matrices, understand what delegation is, other than delegation is not, you guys do it. No, that's not delegation. Delegation is a very, very elegant solution, elegant process. If you don't do that, you will fail as a leader. You'll fail as a leader in your marriage. You'll fail that as a leader on the job, because I don't care what level of work you're at. You have to be able to manage yourself, and you have to be able to manage up. It's very, very interesting to manage up, lead up. You manage up, you lead up to your boss. You show those skills where the boss says, wait a minute, here's a talent that I need to exploit. You move, you improve your life right then and there. It's not any different than in your relationship with your kids. Our kids require management beyond anything we ever imagined in our lifetimes. Oh, having said that, I have two, thank God, brilliant children, which means only two things, which means a prayer works, because I prayed for 9 months that they turn out like their mothers. Thankfully, they did. How much management do leadership do my daughters need to exhibit to manage this guy? As opinionated, as hard-headed as I can be, having sired two girls who are a lot the same. It's leadership. It's the skill you develop, and it's intellectual. If anybody tells you that, oh, the emotion, I'm a natural leader, I lead by laissez-faire, I lead, it's cosmic. Cosmic? Go to the supermarket and try to buy a pound of apples with cosmic leadership.
Well, there you are. I mean, but also, I mean, what we're sort of talking about here is assertiveness, aren't we? Assertiveness is a part of what we're talking about. I think next time we should, next episode, on episode number 6, I think we should talk a little bit about assertiveness and how do you become more assertive when people are more assertive around you? And I think this is something I've been working on for, I don't know, 5 years, and you know, trying to become more cogent, that's the word I would use.
I've read much what you've written, and I think that with due respect to all people watching, listening, if you don't want to listen to that part coming up, I think you're missing something really fundamental, because you get run over. I mean, go walk into a very crowded elevator in Tokyo and see what happens with 60 other people walking behind you. You can't get off your own floor.
Well, it's now, the same in the police station in Croatia. You try and walk in there, people just walk in front of you in some of them. So they put a ticketing system in one of them, you know. But you know,
there's only one other thing I would like to share with you. Speaking of leadership, which is a topic I have been thinking about working on for decades. As you know, I started out very young working, and I had the opportunity to be in a leadership position in a little company, and a big one. And I had the opportunity to lead people from externally as an advisor to some really notable companies. Some years ago, I was asked to write something on leadership, and I started writing. And I realized I was mindless through the process. The more I thought about it, the less I knew. And I ultimately end up writing something called 72 Things a Leader Is Not. In other words, I couldn't bloody define what a leader was. But I could define things a leader is not and should not be. And I found through that process, one day, you want to get depressed? Let's talk about 72 things a leader is not. But in there, and without a doubt, I had a lot of help from some really, really smart, very introspective people. And it was so eye-opening to me as a young man of the things that I was doing that I thought was the right thing to do that were just so totally counterproductive to the holy grail of leadership, which is success. It was success. Just totally, hey, wait a minute. A leader should not do that.
And in that's there, really, that's really good, because I like that approach, because I think there are certain things that you can do which will undermine your leadership. Like, for example, you know, swearing all the time. Yeah. I'm not saying you can't swear. I'm saying you swear all the time. It means when you do swear, just as an example. Yeah. Or being shouty. You know, there are so many things that you could do that would undermine your cogent communication, because that's what you need to become, don't you, as a leader? You need to be. And cogent is like, it's not shouty. It's not aggressive. It's not pushy. It's a way of communicating which is just look up the word cogent. You know what it means. I mean, I've looked it up many times, because my late mentor Mike Briarcliffe, he told me, he's like, cogent, that's what you need to be. And he taught me about that a lot and showed me how to write emails in a cogent way to get someone to do something that you want them to do.
As far as I'm concerned, I think it's very dangerous to confuse volume with reason. Doesn't mean you can't be loud and all that. And then a manningism, don't go from ignorance to arrogance.
Oof, without a stop. Arrogance is a big, big, big no. Big no. Yeah, we don't spend time with people like that.
Well, we try.
Confidence. Confidence. You know, we're gonna go in a second, but because I need to go to the shops and stuff. But confidence and arrogance, there is a massive fine line between the two. But the more you're aware of arrogance, the more you're aware of your confidence, and you know where you sort of sit in that spectrum of ability in relation to your ego is a really important thing. And if I am arrogant, I want people to tell me. I'd like people to come and say, "Hey, I think you're out of line there," because I don't want to be that guy. It's not how my mother would have wanted me to be. It's not how my dad would want me to be, or anybody that I spend time with. No one that I spend time with is like that. You're not like that, you know, and that's why we enjoy hanging out, because the moment you step out of your box of your knowledge and you talk down to someone, that's the moment that you lose that person, don't you? That's the thing.
I know this because I ask you this. Again, the reason I send everything I write to my wife, she edited my book. Now, there were two professional editors that edited that book. And then she did, because she hears my voice and she sees it differently. And again, one of the questions I always ask is, because I am opinionated, I'm big and I talk and wave my arms and, you know, is anything I just said arrogant? Because nobody wants to hear from a loud, arrogant guy. It's just an angry guy being loud. How many times have I asked you in the last 6 months when I sent you something because we're working on something together and say, "Hey, be on the lookout. If anything here comes across arrogant rather than thoughtful."
Well, it's insane, Stephen. There's this guy that jumped over from UFC. Marin, my buddy, was telling me, he showed me the video. This guy jumped over from WWE, like wrestling, right, to UFC, yeah? And he went in and he went to the press conference. And this guy's like probably about 40, right, about my age. And he basically walked into the press conference to meet the other guy who he was fighting, who was like 23. This kid was like a Brazilian brown belt, Brazilian jiu-jitsu brown belt. This guy had been doing wrestling for years. He got paid like half a million dollars. The kid only got paid like 15 or 20K, right? But literally he did not shake the guy's hand and he was just really rude. And then literally this kid just beat him senseless. And he said, "Look, if you'd shaken my hand, I would not have given you a good kicking. I would have just choked you out." But unfortunately, he was so rude that this kid gave him a good beating. It just mystifies my brain when people behave like that. You know, there's so much to learn. There's always someone bigger, someone smarter, someone better, someone with more money, more experience. There's always someone. But then if you aspire to just be better, 1% a day, better, everything you do, 1% a day, in a year, that's a lot of percent, right? And that's how I'm looking at it.
I also think about that 1% is that anybody can improve somebody else's work by some percentage, which, you know, that's where you're starting. But the 1% improvement of yourself, you have to, Steve Manning's isms, is you have to inventory your knowledge every day. You have to learn every day and figure out what you've learned. And that 1%, you have to be receptive to. I have to be receptive to what Nat Schooler says. I may read the 250 word post and say, "Yeah," but in there somewhere, there's a compendium of words. I say, "Wait a minute, that should add to my 1%.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that is true of the young man, minimum wage worker, who parked my car in this office building yesterday afternoon. Because in my conversation with this kid, he comes from El Salvador. "Hey, how you doing?" And I got to talking. I learned something from that kid yesterday. If I'm not open to it because I'm arrogant, "Oh, hey, you know, you and I are talking to a million people here. He's parking cars." No. But the 1% I get from you, the contribution, my 1%, I think is priceless. It's why else would I spend hours with you
Exactly. That's my feeling too. And thank you, Stephen. If everyone wants a copy of Stephen's book, you can see what it's called on the next slide if you're watching on YouTube. And you know, visit legacymediahub.com and you can kind of grab it, or check out Stephen J. Manning and you can find him. Drop us a message, or happy send you the link. So thank you, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching and listening to Positive Personal Power Podcast. Get access to all our podcasts and other important updates on www.legacymediahub.com and subscribe wherever you listen and watch your podcasts on the Legacy Media Hub YouTube channel.